The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So, good morning to you all. Welcome to those just joining. My name again is Matthew, and it's good to sit with you. I was listening to Gil's Friday session just to see exactly where he left off, and it struck me that Gil, he makes teaching look so easy, and I make it look really hard, but that's the situation. I'm no problem with that either. I'm happy to be with you all, and I trust we'll feel each other's hearts, and that'll be plenty. So sometimes people say, about their practice, Matthew, I'm paying attention, I'm being mindful, and everything is still terrible, And it's important to acknowledge that simply using our attention doesn't generate wisdom. Attention, in other words, is not a is not necessarily wholesome in itself or unwholesome. Yeah, we're using our attention all of the time. It is the kind of most basic currency of human beings. The most basic resource. And we want to use it wisely. We want to use our attention wisely, appropriately. And wise attention means that it's connected to wholesomeness. Yeah, it's conjoined with wholesomeness. It's conjoined with, among other things, equanimity. Yeah, what I was alluding to. And more and more, it feels like equanimity is a kind of like the foundation for this path, that this path, as Gil said, as he left off with, this path is about non-clinging. And non-clinging is very closely related to equanimity. Non-clinging is very closely related to equanimity with not getting the promises that craving makes. Yeah, not getting the promises that greed makes, that hatred makes. Yeah, and so sometimes it's defined as a kind of inner balance, and the way I tend to think about it is, it's a non-compulsion around our preferences. Yeah. There's no compulsion to act out our preferences. We may still have preferences, but there's not a kind of compulsion to enact them in the world, to live out this greed, to live out this hate. And that can refer even to just how the way we act out greed and aversion, hatred in our sitting. Yeah, the kind of way we're subtly lured into imagining that this moment can somehow be fixed. Yeah, that sense of like the moment can be fixed. We relinquish that. And so we may still have preferences, but we're not feeling so compelled to enact them. Sarah Lazar and her colleagues describe equanimity as a kind of a widening of the perspective, more readily engaging incoming sensory information, and disengaging kind of cognitive and emotional reactivity. Yeah. So widening the perspective that in our clinging, clinging is always claustrophobic. Yeah. It's always claustrophobic. Everything feels hemmed in, pinched. We widen our perspective rather than solidity meeting solidity. It's maybe like solidity meeting space. Yeah, this ache meeting the space of awareness, and we're relinquishing, maybe renouncing, the kind of defensive coping strategies that we have to deal with the imperfection of the moment. So one of my teachers, Shinzen Young, described it as the balance point. Equanimity is the balance point between suppression on the one hand and identification on the other. Michelle McDonald, I believe, said equanimity is the courage of low expectations, which is very funny. The courage of low expectations. And I think she would add the courage of low expectations, but very high aspirations. Yeah. In a way, I don't want to give one definition. We'll sort of unfold a range of definitions over the course of the week, because something like equanimity has many, many flavors, many facets. And so hopefully, rather than starting with some simple reductionistic idea of exactly what it is, we live into it, we practice into it. And it takes a lot of equanimity just to open to the human condition, you know, to the intensity of the human condition, to dukkha, to suffering. In a way, even after all of these years, every time dukkha arises, it feels a little bit like this freak accident, you know? It's like I still haven't fully acclimatized to the First Noble Truth. You know, it just has this feel of like the universe is off its rails. And it's like, no, Matthew, you just stubbed your toe. You know? It's woven into the fabric of existence. And to actually open to that is no joke. It's no joke. Yeah, to really begin to appreciate what is this inner life and our outer world. This entails a measure of equanimity. Otherwise, it's too much. It's too much. So we open. Now, maybe I say all of this and you think like, ugh, you know, like equanimity, it sounds tiring. Yeah. Sounds tiring. And, I want to, kind of celebrate equanimity as it's very generative, very generative. It is so closely tied to peace, to love, to release. And so this is the focus of the week. So the last weeks, as I said, Gil had done on greed, hate, and delusion, the kind of wellsprings of self-generated suffering. And And even enlightenment itself is sometimes described as the absence of greed and delusion. And what I want to begin this week with is to say that to work skillfully with these forces, with the defilements, with greed and delusion, this requires equanimity. Yeah. And in a way, the greed, the hatred are readily observable, right? The greed, the kind of that hole in the heart, like we try to get what we think we want. And we act out that that craving so often. But craving always overpromises. Yeah. What we get never actually satiates the craving, but compounds it. We might get some fleeting something, but it actually deepens the habit of acting out craving. And so we want to begin to see how the objects of greed, the fantasy of what I get when I get what I want, it's always over promises. So we develop equanimity with longing. That's very tender. It's very tender. And hatred, if you haven't noticed, there's always something wrong. Something could always be better. And so we develop equanimity with imperfection. And so if greed is the kind of hole in the center of your being and hatred feels like your heart is on fire, what is delusion? Well, delusion feels exactly like the truth. Yeah. Until it doesn't. And so the question, how do we see what we can't see? And what I would say is that delusion, yeah, for sure, is more subtle than greed or hatred. But delusion launders our greed and launders our hatred. It serves to justify and dignify the forces of greed and hatred. When we launder money, through some criminal enterprise, I get money and then I make it clean, running it through some legitimate business, right? When you launder greed, you make it look like hope and fun and excitement. When you launder hatred, you clean it to make it look like righteousness, like clarity, like discernment. This, like the delusion serves to obscure the greed and the hatred. And so the invitation is to, if we can have equanimity with greed, with hatred, we do not have to build and fabricate and proliferate the stories and perceptions that launder, that dignify our defilements. Yeah. We develop equanimity with greed, with aversion. And this makes the kind of delusion that serves to make that disappear, to make it look like wisdom, to make it look like fun. Yeah. We no longer need to enact that delusion. But it starts with the equanimity, with these pushes and pulls on the heart. This is the terrain of exploration for the week. So I I offer this for your consideration, and look forward to being with you tomorrow morning. Okay, thank you. Thank you all. I'll come check out the comments here, and see you tomorrow.